אנחנו נמצאים בהמשך מאמר החירות.
We are continuing the article The Freedom.
ספר קבלה למתחיל.
In the book Kabbalah Matchil, Kabbalah for Beginners, page 210, One Law for All the Worlds. What did we talk about thus far? We said that man is only willing to receive it, wants nothing but to receive pleasures, and has no other inclination by birth, wants only to satisfy himself. That's his natural inclination. And because he feels fulfillment in the will to receive his pleasure and lack of it is pain, we are therefore in a constant state of feeling both situations in our life, good, bad, fulfilled, unfulfilled. Anything tasty, anything that's fulfilling is attractive to us, and vice versa. Everything we don't is felt as repelling, untasty. So pleasure and pain, the adducting force and rejecting force, is those are the things that operate on us, and we can't actually do anything about it. There is a possibility to learn what's more beneficial, what's more harmful. Sometimes it doesn't seem that way at first glance. They say that animals don't err because they always know, plants and animals always know what they need to take from the environment for their own good. And man errs. We don't know what's good for us, what's not, from what's around us. Everything we learn, our upbringing, everything we want to give to the young generation, to know what to take from the environment for our own good and what to stay away from. There are a lot of philosophies about it, and approaches, and humanity errs in that. We never know what's good for us and what's not. We see it now in this whole confusion that we're in this general crisis that we're all in, that humanity is undergoing. It's only a sign that we have what to learn from life, what's good for us and what's bad. Meaning we don't know our own will to receive. We don't know what's good for us and what's not. We don't know the kind of fulfillment that are best for it. So the wisdom of Kabbalah, yes, how to receive the best things, the eternal fulfillments, the best for us, and to distance the bad things, that discernment, that scrutiny, and this execution, realizing it, that's the wisdom of Kabbalah. That's why it's called wisdom. That's why the steel, vegetative, and animate don't need it, because by nature, instinctively, they have the right scrutiny, a physical one. And we don't have a healthy, clear understanding through our own creation. We have to acquire the wisdom. What exactly we can receive from the world that's good for us and what we can reject. There's nothing more than those two. Everything we do, our attitude to the world, is about those two things, adducting or rejecting. That's the wisdom of Kabbalah. So we learn the most practical thing, the most needed thing. So now let's see what's one law for all the worlds. Section one law for all the worlds in the article of freedom. Although the wisdom of Kabbalah mentions nothing of our corporeal world, there is still only one law for all the worlds. Therefore, all the corporeal entities of our world, meaning everything within that space, be it still vegetative, animate, a spiritual or a corporal object, if we want to distinguish the unique self-aspect of each of them, how they differentiate from one another, even in the smallest of particles, it amounts to no more than a will to receive, which is all the particular form from the point of view of the renewed creation, limiting it in both quantity and quality, that induce the presence of the attracting force and the rejecting force. There are a few problems here in this section. First of all, we need to mention the first sentence. The wisdom of Kabbalah speaks nothing of our corporal world. Just take it as a fact. Baal Sulam determines it, or declares it, and perhaps later on we'll understand it, but the wisdom of Kabbalah does not talk about this world, meaning all the terms, all the words, every action, everything that is spoken of in the wisdom of Kabbalah is not about this world, but about the spiritual world. What is the spiritual world? Intentions of bestowal, attributes of bestowal, above our human egoistic nature. Meaning, those who do not have that nature do not know what the spiritual world is. They don't even know that they are separated from the spiritual world, that they are in the corporal world. They don't know what to compare their situation with. So the wisdom of Kabbalah does not speak of our world. If it doesn't speak of our world, what do we need it for? So he immediately says, a corporal object, still vegetative, speaking spiritual space, if we are in the corporal world and we have some knowledge about some other world, some other dimension or reality, how does that help us? What do I need it for? It's not connected to me, it doesn't belong to me, completely detached from me. How does that help me? The thing is that influencing our corporal world is possible only through the spiritual world. Meaning we are in the corporal world. It talks about us living here, correcting our state. It talks about us, but the power that comes to us, that governs us and the world, is one that comes from the spiritual world. That is why this wisdom that talks about the spiritual world and speaks of how we can conduct ourselves here in the corporate world from there is a very important knowledge for us. So, discerning, we have to note that the wisdom of Kabbalah does not aim people to what exists here in this world, not to our present self, how we are, what we are, not what's around us. Because there's nothing to change here, nothing to determine. Here, things do not change. They can be activated only from above, from the spiritual world. So, everything that we acquire through the wisdom of Kabbalah is the ability to activate spiritual forces that change our situation, which is called us in the corporate world. The difference between the worlds is only the attribute of bestowal that controls the spiritual world and the attribute of reception that controls this world. Controls whom? The attribute of bestowal or reception. Within man, outside of us, there is nothing. But when a person is controlled or has the attribute of bestowal, it's considered being in spirituality and a spiritual person. And to the extent that the attribute of reception controls that person, he is in the corporal world. Meaning, one's inner state of reception or bestowal determines one's world, being either spiritual or corporal. So the wisdom of Kabbalah is basically aims at changing our inner attributes. In order to change it, it turns to the attribute of the store. This is called the spiritual world. So the spiritual world can comes and controls us. This is called, that's the meaning of coming to a person in the corporate world. Yes. But anything other than those two forces within it, meaning the adducting and rejecting forces, is deemed the bounty from his essence. That bounty is equal for all creatures, as there is no novelty ascribed to it by creation, being extended existence from existence. And it cannot be ascribed to any particular unit, but only to things that are common to all parts of creation, small or large. Each of them receives from that bounty according to its will to receive. And under that limitation, each individual and unit is defined. What is abundance, light? The sensation of the presence of the Creator within man, within a person. And we shouldn't imagine that there is a Creator and a light that emanates from him and enters us and fulfills us and creates in us some pleasure, because it only distances a person from feeling that the Creator is the attribute of bestowal and the light is the attribute of bestowal and pleasure is present in the attribute of bestowal, and the love that is felt here, beginning to be felt here, is the attribute of bestowal. So we shouldn't divide all these phenomena into separate phenomena. Yes. Thus, I have evidently and scientifically proven the self, ego, of every individual in a scientific, completely criticism proof from all sides, even with regard to the system of the fanatic automatic materialists. From now on, we do not need those crippled methods dipped in metaphysics. So Baal HaSulam brings the wisdom of Kabbalah to a form of ordinary science, such as all the attributes, the sciences of nature. We talk about forces, the adducting force, rejecting force, and the will to receive, that sees before it either what adducts it or what rejects it. It's very simple. And that this is all that it talks about. That's why we can relate to all the terms in the wisdom of Kabbalah, just like physical terms in physics, where besides rejection and abduction, there's nothing, beginning in the subatomic physics or in the highest physics, interstellar astrophysics. It's all about the encounter of two contradicting forces. To the extent that they are connected, rejecting or connected. That's all there is. Because the will to receive and the pleasure that is in the spiritual terms begets all kinds of corporal dresses, all kinds of results that operate in our world as many thousands of forces and interrelationships. But we can always say that Kli and light abducting, rejecting one with respect to the other. Of course, it makes no difference whether this force being the will to receive is a result and a fruit of the structure that had materialized through chemistry, or that the structure is a result and a fruit of that force. For we know that the main thing is that only this force, imprinted in every being and atom of the will to receive within its boundaries, is deemed the unit where it is separated from its environment, and that holds true both for a single atom or for a group of atoms called a body. So the foundation called will to receive is the foundation of the entire creation. That foundation is a spiritual one, where the entire reality, spiritual, corporal, we can divide it and separate each object, each item, according to the size of the will to receive in it. It is amazing how many atoms we can imagine existing in the universe. Infinite number of stars, galaxies, in which there is a very infinite number of stars in each galaxy. In each of them, there is an infinite amount of atoms, and the difference between each atom is the amount of will to receive in it. That's how differentiating the division is. Each element in creation is differentiated by that amount of will to receive. It's just amazing that if the same will to receive had been in two atoms, they would have been one. Why are they two? Because there's a difference between them in how they move, in their location in space, in something that differentiates them. There's still a difference. See how the will to receive is divided or divisible into an infinite amount of numbers. Each object has its own uniqueness, or in the connections between them, or are they both? First of all, there's a will to receive in itself, regardless of them. The general will to receive that stands opposite the abundance can be divided. Look to how many details in the still vegetative level in this world. This entire world is like one point compared to the spiritual world. The closest spiritual degree to us is like infinity. That's with respect to the essence of the desire. What is a desire in this world? In the still, in these stars and the atoms in them, and still in the vegetative and animate. Even if you take it and describe it, we don't understand it in our brain. This whole reality is like a point with respect to the higher degree, which is the smallest degree in Asiya, in the world of Asiya, which is infinite, totally infinite. That's how it is with respect to this world, in the essence of the will to receive. Meaning, if we talk about 125 degrees, what are 125 degrees? Each degree has an infinite amount of degrees lengthwise and widthwise. It's like a ball. It's multidimensional, this will to receive. So see how many to the infinite number of details in it. So we can't even imagine it, but we can try and somehow picture how these infinite amount of details should eventually produce a sensation, a perception of the interconnectedness between things. How the light and the kli can be interconnected. Because the difference between the parts of the kli in the sensation of the difference, even between adjacent atoms, in the sensation between them, is a place for the sensation of the light, because we don't feel, the Kli doesn't feel the light. It feels something that feels it. If within it becomes divided and including many details, that's why we should understand through it how this division, the breaking of the vessels, and then the reconnection, how complex it makes the Kli. It brings us to feel the entire power of the creation, of the Creator in it. And all other aspects where there is some surplus of that force, of the will to receive, are not related in any way to that particle or that group of particles, either from the aspect of its selfness, or just in general, which is the bounty. Which is the bounty extended to them from God, where it is a common matter for all parts of creation, without distinguishing specific created bodies. So there's a light and Kli, basically. The will to receive and the light that feels it. What does it mean, what feels it? What the will to receive wants to feel, to sense, is what actually fulfills it. Now we shall understand the matter of the freedom of the individual according to the definition of the first factor, which we called the Bet, where all the previous generations, which are the ancestors of that individual, have imprinted their nature. And as we have clarified, that the meaning of the word individual is but the boundaries of the will to receive imprinted in its group of particles, meaning my will to receive is a result of thousands, many thousands of exterior influences and results that now that I'm in the situation I'm in, where am I here? I don't understand. It's not the same raw first will to receive. It's after many, many influences from the world and from all other souls. That's what I take as me. Yes. Thus you see that all the tendencies he has inherited from his ancestors are needed no more than boundaries, as no more than boundaries of his will to receive, either from the side, from the perspective of the attracting force in him, or from the perspective of the rejecting force in him. Meaning, to study, yes, the knowledge of the will to receive, that's what we inherit. That appear before us as tendencies for stinginess or generosity, a tendency to mingle or to stay secluded, and so on. Because of that, they really are his self, ego, fighting for its existence. Thus, if we eradicate even a single tendency from that particular individual, although this individual acquired this tendency by inheritance, it's not an original tendency, but something seemingly acquired through the incarnations, we are considered to be cutting off an actual organ from his bones. And it is also regarded as a genuine loss for all creation, because there is no other like it, nor will there ever be like it in the entire world. And taking into consideration everything that it's acquired through the influence of its ancestors. After we have thoroughly clarified the just right of the individual according to natural law, let us turn and see just how practical it is, without compromising the theory of ethics and statesmanship. And most importantly, how is this right applied by our holy Torah? Meaning how the freedom of the individual is implemented. When I read it, I don't understand how can there be freedom for us. What is it? What is freedom? No influence, pressure from the society. We have to determine some laws. We have to exist next to each other. We don't have a choice. So whatever limitations we set, whatever pressures, necessity, yes, on the one hand. On the other hand, where is our freedom of expression, the habits we acquire, the tendency. So of course, we'll have to just restrict ourselves and start behaving very narrowly, so to speak. Our behavior will be dictated by this or that environment. Is this our self-realization? And if not, then what's the benefit in existing every generation as parts in the human society? We have to break it. We have to become anarchists or something. Everything is permitted. Do whatever you want. Maybe that's that seemingly natural behavior. Meaning, how the limitation on the part of society, the limitation of freedom of action and freedom of the individual, how do they cooperate with the purpose of developing ourselves? Everyone must develop his or herself freely, otherwise we don't realize ourselves. So how do these two forces, the social pressure, the exterior social pressure that limits us to the point of not of being completely immobile, how do they operate together with people being within that state able to develop freely? It's contradiction. It's not clear what unites the collection of particles into one desire, one body called individual. If each particle is called an individual, you're talking about people? What did he describe here? And right now he's not. He'll talk about it afterwards. He'll say that only the common goal. If everyone has a separate goal of self-satisfaction, this is not a society. It's an exploitation. Society begins with everyone understanding that he is dependent on the others to the extent that they receive fulfillment, confidence, correction, that in that they share with him. Anything less than that is not a society. It's just it's a society of people in constant war of everyone against society. That's what happens to us. You can see it very beautifully in movies about courts and trials and stuff like that. We who are living in our modern society, or in general in society, yes, in all our lives, past lives, man is always at war with his environment. There are laws, but in any war there are laws. We've been through wars, so we know it. There's an agreement, yes? I don't touch this, you don't touch that, yes? If you do this, I'll do that. So then people understand how much it is worthwhile or not worthwhile to get into conflict. So it's the same here in this society, meaning it's not society in the sense of bonding, but it's an environment, a hostile environment, where if I want to use it, where I want to use it for my own good, and it wants to take from me as much as it can, without regard of me, That's the truth of it. But we don't have a choice, so we have some sort of negotiation and reach some sort of agreement, which is called social laws. In it, we try. What can we do? It's the least of all bads. But that's not the society that Kabbalah refers to. In the society that Kabbalah refers to, the true environment should be should provide each and every one with all the things that each person needs, and each person should care only for the well-being of the society in return. And in this reciprocal manner, man and his environment will live, will coexist as cells in a body where everyone serves everybody else. And that will bring peace, confidence, and prosperity. That's it. So our will to receive is right now in a form that we can't do it. But Bala Salam says, by whatever forces there are in us, egoistic forces, how we, through our existence, how can we acquire corrections? How do we know how to exist? So here comes this law of following the majority, which is a law that exists in society, and following the individual is the law that exists in individuals. And we'll talk about it in a minute, that upper guidance is divided into these two types of relationship with respect to us, into all of humanity, meaning the general kli of Adam Rishon. It relates to it with in the form of following the majority, and when everyone corrects his soul, then it follows the rule of following the individual. In that they equalize. Because of that we have that question of if I'm not for me, who is for me, or there's none else beside him, where following the individual is there's none else beside him, when everyone and how the Creator relates to society in general, following the majority, corresponds to if I'm not for me, who is for me? When I have to work with my own powers toward the exterior environment. Go ahead. Take after the collective. Our scriptures say, take after the collective. That means that wherever there is a dispute between the collective and the individual, we are obliged to rule according to the will of the collective. Thus, you see that the collective has a right to expropriate the freedom of the individual. That's what we said, we are in a hostile relationship with society, where I always want to exploit society for my own good. And society objects to that. But we are faced with a different question here, even graver than the first. For this law seemingly regresses humanity instead of promoting it, because while most of mankind is as yet undeveloped, and the developed are always a small minority, it turns out that if you follow the will of the collective, which are the undeveloped and the ones of hasty heart, or the reckless, the opinions and desires of the wise and the developed, which are always the minority, are never taken into account. So, why do we care if society advances, is very progressed or not so progressed? It might be a society of cavemen, or people who live in skyscrapers in Manhattan compared to Africa. The difference where you determine if you follow a progressing society that you want to follow, or if you follow a society that lives in tents. So that's a society that I don't want to follow. Meaning, does it even depend on the level of the evolution of that society? Or maybe we can say it differently. On a society that where the majority follows mundane desires, earthly desires, and only a small part of it is drawn to philosophy, culture, ballet, all kinds of things. Should I stick with that? What should be the values of the society to which I should determine if it's worthwhile submitting to or not? Who are the majority? And why did the Creator determine that I should follow the majority? Because His guidance from above, where I seemingly connect to crude people, which are the majority. Thus, you seal off humanity's fate to regression, for it will not be able to make even a single step forward, if we're talking about forward in terms of spiritual or corporal values. That's the question, because these things are completely irrelevant. The more people evolve in their desires, the more advanced they are as a contemporary person, the crueler they become, they want to exploit people more, that their will to receive is greater. So how does he measure it? Progress. Although, as it says in the Article of the Peace, about the obligation to caution in the laws of nature, but since we are ordered by Providence to live a social life, to lead a social life, we have become obligated to observe all the rules that deal with sustaining the society. If we had known all these rules, that's a problem. If everything had been clear, disclosed, yes, the wisdom of Kabbalah talks about the laws of reality. Had that been open, revealed, I would know what's good, what's bad, if I should do this or do that. On the one hand, I'm like an animal, having no ability to needing no scrutiny. I know exactly which grass to eat, even though I was born yesterday, and what I should do or shouldn't do. I won't fall off high places because I instinctively understand and know. So people become like animals, never making mistakes. On the one hand. On the other hand, maybe it's good. So, had the wisdom of Kabbalah been completely revealed, it would turn us into animals, beasts. All the doubts that we have compared to animals are mistakes. And these mistakes are permission. That's where we grow. So don't complain for making mistakes in life and not knowing how to behave. Learning how to behave, how to conduct ourselves, is what the wisdom of Kabbalah enables us. Studying the laws of nature and having the right attitude to it, using it, that is how we grow and not remain animals. If we underestimate the importance, even to a small extent, nature will take its revenge on us, regardless of whether or not we understand the reason in the law. We can see that there is no other arrangement to live by within our society, but that law of take after the collective. Because if that's what the Creator sets in society, what's following the majority? Take after the Creator. Let's say we're all one person, one body, and that person should exist, live healthily, securely, comfortably, you know, in peace, etc. All the good things. That's called taking after the collective, where the well-being of the collective is above everything else it might be. It doesn't matter if you jump. If you jump, but the public well-being says differently, it's a sign of a sick organ. It's like a sick organ that doesn't follow the rules of the body. That's taken after the collective, where the general plan relates to the entire body, to the existence of the entire body, so all the parts become arranged correctly. Of course, if one of them does not follow the rest, you should just cut it out and throw it, as because it's something harmful to the entire body. That's called taking after the collective. Where every single one must absolutely accept, submit to taking after the collective. It's called the law of public well-being. We can see that there is no other arrangement to live by within our society but that take after the collective. If we could see it, if we could understand that's the situation, our lives would have been much better. But, on the other hand, Baal HaSulam determines, explains in the article The Last Generation, the solution, that if we had kept this law of taking after the collective, meaning if we wanted to have a nice relationship, love for one another, without connecting to the spiritual roots, we would harm ourselves. So the law of taking after the collective must be aimed toward attaining the spiritual purpose, the purpose of creation, which sets every dispute and tribulation in society in order. Thus, this law is the only instrument which gives society a right to exist. Therefore, it is considered one of the natural precepts of providence. Natural precepts, meaning laws operating in society. A law, a mitzvah, precept is a law. We have 620 desires in our soul. So we have 620 laws that we have to arrange to work in order to bestow upon one another. And the correction of each and every desire is called making a mitzvah. And we must accept it and guard it meticulously, regardless of our understanding. This law exists before we understand and after we understand. It's the reason for every good and every bad we have. It is like all the other precepts in the Torah, all of which are laws of nature and His providence, which come to us from above downward. And I have already described how all the stubbornness that we detect in the conduct of nature in this world is only because they are extended and taken from laws and conducts of upper spiritual worlds. But we also have to understand that they come in such a way that they invert these forms. What in spirituality is bestowal in us appears as reception. It is like that, hence you can understand that the mitzvot in the Torah are no more than laws and conducts, he's writing about it. So there are laws and conducts set in the upper worlds, market, take it as a definition. That's what we talk about when we say Torah and mitzvot. Mitzvot, precepts, are laws. If I follow inwardly these laws, If I'm willing to keep them, it's called correcting myself, making a mitzvah. So what do? I only behave as nature behaves around me. Nothing more than that. Around me there are 620 laws, and if in my 620 desires I keep those laws, and I'm in balance with society, which is called being in the world Ein Sof, infinity world, the corrected state. He is one, and his name one, adhesion, dvikut with the Creator. The Creator is all these laws put together, operating on me. That's the dvikut, the adhesion of the Creator with me, the act of the Creator, which are the roots for all the conduct of nature in this world. As two drops in a pond. Thus we see, we have proven that all the laws of taking after the collective is the law of providence and nature. Thus we have proven. So all in all, these laws accumulate into one law. Love thy friend as thyself. Love bestowed. But in every single desire, of course, there is its own manner, conduct of keeping the general law of providence. Section, a path of Torah and a path of pain. Yet, the question about the regression that had come up as a result of that law is as yet unsettled. And that is indeed our concern, to find ways to mend that. But providence in and of itself does not lack because of that, for it has already thoroughly enveloped humankind in two ways, the path of Torah and the path of pain, in such a way that it is a guarantee of humanity's continuous development and progress toward the end without any reservations. Indeed, obeying this law is a natural, necessary commitment. So whether we like it or not, we are under this law. As much as we keep it according to our level of development, we feel bad, and as much as we do keep it according to our degree of evolution, we will feel good. Guidance deliberately hides that law of bestowal from us, because it must give us the ability to determine ourselves, our attitude to it, so that we will understand that keeping the law of bestowal despite our nature is the best thing for us, and direct ourselves independently toward either pleasure or pain. For the time being, while we are not on the path of being above pleasure or pain, above Tzimtzum Aleph, above the Masach that we erect over our will to receive, we are in a process, necessary process from above, where providence, further adducting and rejecting for its pleasure and pain, aims us toward the goal without asking us what we want. To the extent that we can be above our nature, providence stops pressuring us with pleasure or pain, and we produce the forces to advance, which are called the path of Torah. The right of the collective to expropriate the freedom of the individual. We must ask further, for things are justified when matters revolve around issues that are between two people, that then we can accept the law of taking after the collective through the obligation of providence, which instructs us to look after the well-being and happiness of my friends. But the law of taking after the collective is held valid by the Torah in matters that regard disputes between man and God, although these matters seem to be irrelevant to the to the existence of society. Therefore, so the law of behavior of man toward society or man toward creator are the same behavior. Or maybe you don't understand that. We understand it already because we understand that the Creator appears within society, within the collective soul. And besides that, there is no concept of Creator, that law, that force appears in the connection between the souls. That's the Creator. That's its only manifestation, possible manifestation, that we can feel, sense. But while we don't perceive this picture, it's very strange. The connection between society and the Creator. Well, all right. From this, I get to that. First, I have to get along with my friends. That's how I learn. And then I go to the Creator and get along with Him. But, in fact, there is no before and after, or this without that. The connection between the souls, the connection of man and society, the reciprocal connection, is in fact the vessel in which the force of the soul appears, which the person obtains, develops, and senses, and that force is felt by man as the Creator. There is no bestowal on man and bestowal on the Creator. We speak of it this way in the wisdom of Kabbalah in order to distinguish or give numbers or draw charts and tables and all kinds of possibilities to determine situations, clear states as cause and consequence in our corrections. But in fact, the force of bestowal that appears in our vessels as a result of efforts and corrections of man, this is the Creator. That's called Creator. There is no attribute of bestowal on the part of man, on the part of the Creator, on the part of His essence, the light, the Kli. No. The attribute of bestowal is the attribute of bestowal. It's an essence. Bestowal is essence, just like reception. It doesn't matter whom it comes from or toward whom. It's just the concept itself that appears in corrected kelim. That's why that force, that concept, that achievement, that attainment of the giver that appears in the kli, it's called bestowal on the part of man, and that's called the Creator. So when the attribute of bestowal appears, we say He, His life and His actions are one. Or Israel and the Torah and the Creator are one. It can't be anything but one. The attribute of bestowal is one form, the corrected kli, the person, the soul, the Creator, the lights, they're all one. It's a concept attained. So the question still stands: how can we justify that law which obligates us to accept the opinion of the majority, which is, as we've said, undeveloped, and to reject and annul the opinion of the developed, which are always a small minority? But as we have shown, the mitzvot and the Torah were not given in order to were given only in order to purify Israel, meaning to develop in us the sense of recognition of evil imprinted in us at birth, which is generally defined as our self-love, and to come to the pure good defined as love of the fellow person, which is the one passage to the love of God. And the precepts between man and God fall into that criteria, which are tools of virtue that detach man from self-love, which is harmful to society. It is thus obvious that the topics of dispute regarding the precepts between man and God relate to the problem of society's right to exist. Thus, they too fall into the framework of taking after the collective. So this law of following the majority must obligate every single person to aim in his correction toward the well-being of society. But everyone in his personal correction is directly connected to the Creator with the law of following the individual, meaning I am the only one, the unique, as unique as the Creator, to the extent that I have the attribute of the soul. That's what makes me unique, and everyone is like that. And in that, one must not influence or corrupt any other person. Everyone has his own form, just like every cell and every organ in the body must function exactly as it is in its own unique formula, written especially for it. But they're all working for the general body, for the collective body. And here we see the freedom of the individual, the freedom of the collective as complementary. And in this reciprocal way, they have the ability to develop completely freely. And thus, the freedom of each of them is maintained. Yes. Now we can understand the conduct of discriminating between halakha and agada. No, let's keep it to the next lesson. We won't have time to examine it right now. So we'll end the lesson at that. Alright, that concludes our lesson. Thank you all very much for participating, and have a good day or good night.